He is also known as Karthik Subramanian. He is a congregation member who works as an assistant professor in Vishwakarma Institute of Technology. He was introduced to Krishna consciousness in 1994 by His Grace Radhesham Prabhu when he was an engineering student in Pune Institute of Computer Technology, that is PICT. After finishing his engineering, he worked as a software engineer in Patni Computers for 1 year. Later, he took to teaching job since he had a liking for it, and he did so that he can devote more time for Krishna consciousness. He also did his ME in Computers from Government College of Engineering, Pune. He has been conducting college programs for students in Sinhagad College of Engineering for last 7 years. He is a married devotee with wife and a son having age 1.5 years. He renders various services in temple, especially in IVF, like collecting easy donations, then the sales of IVF books, and he also is a part of the marriage board of the congregation that arranges marriages among devotees. So in my personal life, he is my Shiksha Guru. When I was doing my engineering, he used to conduct programs for me. So today we have great fortune that he will be speaking on the topic arranged marriage versus love marriage. Hare Krishna.
ओम अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सागनरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामीनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामिने गौरत्विषे नमः हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछा कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
सो व्हेन लास्ट वीक दिस टॉपिक वाज अनाउंस्ड लव मैरिज वर्सेस अरेंज मैरिज One devotee came up to me and he told me that why don't you speak on love marriage, arranged marriage and no marriage. So I told him that I will speak only on the first two. The third part could be spoken by somebody else in another IVF meeting. So before going into the topic as such, the very word marriage, you know, in Sanskrit, just vivaha, the literal translation of it according to the Vedic dictionaries are to maintain and to uplift. So this is considered the meaning of the word vivaha. To maintain and to uplift. So it's considered a samskara. You know, vivaha is considered one of the samskaras. So according to the Vedic standards, there are various samskaras that are performed. And the samskaras begin before you are born and they end after you die. For example, before a person is born, brought into this world, there is Garbhadhan samskar for the would-be child who will come inside the womb. And after he dies and goes away, there is Antyeshti, after he departs. Okay, so samskara literally means purificatory rites. Performed for purification. So there are samskaras or purificatory rites before the soul comes to this world and after he leaves this world as well. You know, so, and among all the samskaras, vivaha is one of the samskaras. It's considered a purifying act. Why it is considered? Because this vivaha samskara, you know, it helps, you know, one to understand the goal of marriage, which is actually to enable the husband and wife to come closer to God. That is, to live peacefully, to purify their existence as well as their children, and to take everybody beyond the bodily platform closer to God. So that is the whole purpose. That's why it's a samskara. So this is the literal meaning of the word marriage, you know, to maintain and to uplift the spiritual consciousness of the husband, the wife, and the would-be children. So, traditionally we see that marriages or vivaha were always very opulently performed. You know, even if you see maybe some generations back in India, typically marriages would last sometime, you know, 4 days, 7 days. And you may go home and you can ask your grandparents how big their marriage was. You may get such answers that it was a 4 day marriage. Or sometimes even 7 days marriage. So somebody may wonder, you know, why is such a pompous ceremony? You know, 4 days or 7 days, why make such a big hue and cry about it? So the answer is that such an elaborate ceremony was there so that both the husband and wife would never forget the fact that they got married, because it was such a big event. It was too big an event to forget. And also so many people would have come, you know, so many hundreds and thousands of people. So that makes it all the more that this marriage event would become a very big event in one's life. And especially so for the girl. Because in the Vedic situation, a boy may marry a second time. But for the girl, it was the one and only marriage. And it was assumed by default that marriage means it's insoluble. Insoluble means it can never be broken. There's no question about it. Death, you know, makes us part. I mean, only till death, you know, we'll be together. So that is the vow that one takes. And it was taken for granted. There was nothing like divorce. This terminology itself was unknown to people. So that's why, you know, such an elaborate ceremony was there. So today sometimes we see, you know, marriages are performed very casually, or you know, sometimes, you know, people get married in the court. You know, they go to a court and they have some two friends who sign a paper. Okay? And with the same ease they sign the divorce paper as well, because it involves the same thing. You just fill a form and you just sign up and you're divorced as well. Okay, so that so we see that in the Vedic tradition, right from the beginning, how this is considered such a important activity. Also, marriage had a very important role, the specific one being to dovetail the sex impulse. That is the main goal of marriage, to dovetail the sex impulse. Because there are rules and regulations within married life for performing sex life. So, it enables one to gradually get purified and come to the platform of pure devotional service. So, this is also a very important function of marriage. Okay. And the most important thing was that, especially for the girl again, that she could fix, you know, because generally it is said that once a girl fixes her mind on somebody for marriage, she cannot change her mind. That means what is said is that woman psychology works in this way, that when a woman offers her heart to any man, then she cannot take her heart away from that man. You know, the first person whom she gives her heart to in terms of love. So it remains concrete for her life. And that is why it was very important, especially that all women are married at a very young age. You know, before, you know, their chastity is lost. You know, before they have contemplated on some man. So this was considered very important. For example, we see in the Mahabharata, when Bhishma Pitama, when he kidnapped Amba, Ambika and Ambalika for his stepbrother Vichitra Virya. You know, we see that Amba comes and he tells that I have already given my heart to some other king. So then Bhishma says, well, if you have already given your heart to somebody, then you cannot marry Vichitra Virya. It's not possible. So you have to go away. And Amba goes to that king, to the prince to whom she had given her heart. But that prince also rejects her, saying that, no, now you have been taken by Bhishma. No, I will not take you. And of course, the story goes on that Amba becomes very annoyed and she gives up her body, and in the next life, you know, she vows to be the cause of Bhishma's destruction. And she comes as whom in the next life? Yeah, Shikhandi. The same Amba comes as Shikhandi in the next life. You know, as a eunuch actually. And Shikhandi stands in front of Arjun when Arjun is shooting arrows at Bhishma Pitama. So we see this fact that especially for a girl, once she has given her heart to any man, it is said that she cannot love any other person properly. You know, so it was very important that women are married at a young age. So this was the concept. So according to the scriptures, there are various kinds of marriages. You know, broadly there are two types. Types of marriage that are acceptable and types that are not so much acceptable. So the Manusamhita explains 8 types of marriage. For example, the first type of marriage it calls is Brahma Vivaha, where the father of a girl finds a suitable match and offers his girl to this particular, you know, boy. So it's called as a Brahma Vivaha, the first, and this is considered the best type. Arranged marriage, where the parent of the girl finds a suitable bride, groom for his daughter. And the second and third one was where the father of the girl would give his daughter to a rishi or some scholar or some priest, you know, and so forth. So this was considered also a type of arranged marriage only, which was also quite good. The fourth type of arranged marriage was where the boy would ask the girl's father for the girl's hand. And if it was okay for the girl's father, then he would accept it. Otherwise, he would reject it. So and this was considered a form of arranged marriage. Okay, so technically they are called as Brahma, Deva, Arsa and Prajapatya. These are the 4 technical names for these 4 types of marriage. Where the father of the bride is involved totally in it. Either he does it himself, he gives his daughter to a rishi, a sage or a priest. Or somebody comes and asks him and he considers whether it is a suitable proposal. And if it is, he gives. So these are the first 4 types of marriages which were generally arranged. And this was generally always considered preferable. Because if the marriage would be done in this way, then it is said that good progeny was almost guaranteed. Then there were other 4 types of marriages, which were not so much recommended. The first of which is Asura Vivaha, where the boy pays money to the girl's father and he accepts the girl, you know. That means he pays some money to the bride's father and he gets the bride. So this was called as Asura Vivaha. This was considered tolerable. Slightly less tolerable than that, the 6th type of marriage was Gandharva Vivaha, which is equivalent to the modern day what we call as love marriage, where the girl's father was not involved at all. The boy and the girl, they met each other somewhere, they liked each other, and by mutual consent they got married. That is called as Gandharva Vivaha, 6th type, which was just considered barely tolerable, not recommended. The 7th type was Rakshasa Vivaha, where the girl's choice was also not there. You know, the boy would come in some chariot and kidnap the girl away and take her away by force. Okay, neither the girl's choice was there, nor her father's choice was there. Just like Bhishma kidnapped Amba, Ambika, Ambalika for Vichitra Virya. It was a Rakshasa Vivaha. It's a kidnap. So this is considered not at all recommended and quite bad. Okay. And the worst of all, the last one was considered called as Pishacha Vivaha, where the boy would come at night to the girl's house and steal away the girl when everybody else was sleeping and kidnap her and marry her in this way. At least in the Gandharva Vivaha, the person who would come to kidnap the bride, he was ready with a sword and he would say that, okay, I'll fight with anybody. Okay, anybody wants to obstruct me, come and fight with me. Otherwise, go back. So that was Gandharva. At least he showed his guts. But in Pishacha, it was more of a cowardness. And it was considered a totally prohibited type of activity. But still, it was mentioned because some people do like that. So these were the broad eight types of marriage which are mentioned. Okay, so it's not just arranged marriage versus love marriage. The eight types are there. But as I told you, broadly, the first four were arranged. And the later four, the first two were some kind of love marriage, especially the Gandharva Vivaha. And the seventh and eighth, even the girl did not express her willingness, but just the boy kidnapped her. Either in presence of everybody in broad daylight or at night when everybody was sleeping. So these are the various types of marriages that were there. And there are examples for all of them. Especially Gandharva Vivaha was very, this Rakshasa Vivaha was very popular among Kshatriyas. We see very often that happening in the Shastram. So, these are the various types of marriages that were, are spoken about. But as I told you, the most recommended one was the arranged marriage, the Vedic arranged marriage. And this is a very simple way in which the parents of the bride and groom would arrange, the boy and the girl to come together. And this was especially done by the parents taking into account the astrological match. Because astrology is considered a very important, integral part to Vedic science. And astrology reveals a person's character, it reveals his karma, it reveals, for example, what will happen in future and so forth. So it was very important to match the astrology of the boy and girl. To give a simple example, in astrology, suppose if the boy's chart shows bad period in some particular time of his life, if in the same period the girl's astrology chart also shows a very bad period, then it is not recommended to match both of them. Because at that same time, both are going to have a bad time. Means 100% it's going to be double bad. Okay. So if somebody is having a bad time in some particular period, if the other person at that time he has a good time, because in marriage, both the husband and wife, their karma becomes so intricately wound together that if somebody is supposed to have a good time and somebody is supposed to have a bad time, then if such a match is done, then at that time at least it will become tolerable, because then at least something will be going on. Otherwise, if both are going to have a bad time at the same time, then it's very dangerous. This is one example I'm giving actually. There are too many details in it. But in any case, the astrology was considered a very important part of marriage. And generally we see that marriages would be done at very young age, generally before the girl attained puberty. A girl attains puberty generally at the age of 12 or 13. So slightly before that the marriage would be done. Of course, today we see in India, it is banned and, people raised a very big hue and cry about child marriage, saying that you are not giving any option to the girl, it is not good and so forth. But one devotee, he put it very nicely. He asked, what is better? Is child marriage better or is teenage pregnancy better? Today we see that child marriage has certainly been abolished, by the government rules and regulations. But we see that still, when people attain puberty, they mix with each other. And so often there are pregnancies and there are so many millions of abortions, with teenage girls. So which is better? So strictly speaking, man, no matter what type of laws he makes, he can never do the perfect thing. So we see it was very good because when at such a young age the girl and the boy would be matched, it was not that they would stay together immediately. It is said though the marriage would take place at a young age, the girl would generally be in the parents' place. And once a while during some formal festival or some family occasion, she would cook food and she would go and serve her husband, who was still staying with his parents only. And in this way they would be brought together under the guidance of the elders at particular time periods, which was very good, which made them come closer. And later, after she grew up and she attained puberty, matured, then they would come and stay together. So this was the system actually. And it was very good because you see that both the boy and girl at that particular age, they knew that I have this person. You know, the boy also was maybe 16 or 17 or whatever, he knew that I have married, I have a wife. And he knew that obviously, you know, I'm not supposed to keep looking at other women because I'm married now. And similarly, the girl also knew the same thing. If you see in today's society, you know, especially in an urban environment, there is so much stress among young people, you know, to have a partner sometimes. Just like in, at least, I was born and brought up in Bombay till 12th standard. So I remember in 11th and 12th when I was in college, so many of the boys, you know, had girlfriends and everything. So the boys who did not, they had some kind of an inferiority complex. So they would feel actually, all right, these people have girlfriends and they go around, you know, we don't have anybody. It actually was a, you know, a public status symbol and so forth. Maybe even 10 years back in colleges in Bombay. I don't know how bad it is today. Maybe everybody has managed to get somebody. But it does lead to a lot of stress and competition. You know, somebody has, you know, a partner and why somebody does not, etc. But here you see that at a young age itself, you know, they were matched together. So there was no tension in their head. And it was very common actually, just like Prabhupada remarks that he had three sisters. Prabhupada had three sisters and he says that all his sisters were married at very young age. At the age of 9, 12 and 11, his three sisters got married. And it is said that when the second sister who got married at 12, till 12 when her marriage was not done, Prabhupada's mother actually told Prabhupada's father, Gaur Mohande, that if you are not going to marry her immediately, I will drown myself in the Ganga. She has become 12 years and you are still doing nothing. So this was, you know, a very standard thing. And Prabhupada himself, when he married, he was in third year. So maybe some 18 or 19. And Prabhupada's wife was 11 at that time. Quite young. And of course, she stayed at her father's house. And slightly later, after 2-3 years, she joined, you know, Prabhupada's family that way. So we see it was very common for devotees, people in the Vedic times to get married in this way. And this promoted chastity and love and a proper unity between the husband and wife. Of course, arranged marriage could also be done by the guru. For example, sometimes even the, you know, especially even in Vedic times, when the children would be under the, when especially the boys, when they would be in the Gurukul, you know, studying with the Guru. So, at the end of the study period, the Guru could also find out, you know, whether this person is it necessary for him to marry immediately or so forth. And if he felt that his student should get married, even the Guru could arrange the marriage. And it was a very common thing again. Even modern times we see, for example, Prabhupada would arrange the marriage. Prabhupada had arranged the marriage of so many of his disciples. You know. One nice example of a marriage arranged by Srila Prabhupada was that of Burijan Prabhu and Jagatarini Mataji. So this Burijan Prabhu, you know, he was a devotee, he had become a devotee in New York. He was from the United States, he became a devotee in New York and later he was sent to Japan to preach. So he was preaching in Japan and later he was told to go and open a center in Hong Kong. So he along with one more devotee, Bali Mardan Prabhu at that time. So both of them were in Hong Kong and they were trying to open a new center. So meanwhile there was this girl whose name was Jane. Jan. J-A-N-N-E. She was an Australian actress. And she was flying to London via Los Angeles for the launch of her new movie. So when she dropped in Los Angeles, you know, she was very frustrated with material life. Obviously everybody is. But she had the intelligence to look out for a higher, you know, source. And she landed up in the ISKCON temple, Vatsek Avenue. And she joined. She did not go for that premiere. She cancelled the premiere and she stayed on. She wrote to her actor, her co-actor, that I am not coming now, you go yourself. So she joined the temple. So 6 months she stayed in the temple. And at that time what had happened is that Burijan Prabhu was preaching in Hong Kong. He had expressed a desire to Prabhupada that he would like to marry. So Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. And, you know, he had this new disciple, this girl, Australian actress. So he told her that, you do one thing, you go to Hong Kong now, and you marry Bhurijan Prabhu. So, she had not even seen him actually. You know, but she obeyed him. And Prabhupada told Bhurijan Prabhu also, this girl is coming by flight on so and so day to Hong Kong. So go to the airport, pick her up, get married and start preaching. So this was the instruction. So in Hong Kong at that time, there was nobody. There was only Balibardhan Prabhu, who was a brahmachari about to take sannyas, and Bhurijan Prabhu. So both these devotees went, picked this Mataji up from the Hong Kong airport, and Balimardhan Prabhu performed the marriage, and immediately left. He had to take sannyas and other things. He left. And this young couple was there, who had to start the Hong Kong ISKCON center. And so this was a very, a classic case of arranged marriage, where typically the boy and girl never meet each other before marriage. And this is very common actually. Even in India, I'm sure even if you go to your own houses and you ask your, even maybe your grandparents or somebody, whether they saw each other before marriage, the answer is no, they did not. Because only the parents would see. The parents would find out everything, whether the family status matches, whether the horoscope matches, whether the mood and everything matches, everything they would find out. And the boy and girl would simply agree and they would meet each other on the day of marriage when they would exchange garlands. First time they would look at each other. And it was considered quite normal at that time. Though today if you propose this to somebody, it will be a shock actually. So if you see, even in Prabhupada times, people got married like that on Prabhupada's instruction. Especially for a Western person, you can imagine. Yeah, it's a lot of surrender actually. And it is said that in the next day in the Melbourne newspaper, there was a headlines. The headlines read, "Weird cult forces famous Australian actress to marry a Japanese monk." So this was the headlines in Melbourne. Because this Mataji was quite famous in Melbourne as an actress, and this Bhurijan Prabhu, that time he was preaching in Japan. So they thought that he was a Japanese monk. So they said that a weird cult, you know, because for them Hare Krishna is quite weird. It forced this actress to marry this monk. So in this way we see that marriages arranged would be either done by the parents or by the guru. And in both cases there was an advantage, the main advantage being that you had the blessings of your elders. You know, either the parents, in case the parents fixed it, or the spiritual master who fixed it. There was the blessings of the elders. And you know, this actually added. And in fact, when the blessings were there, it was not just a passive blessing. It was also very active. That whenever there was any problem in those marriages, the elders would interfere and they would try to sort things right. It is very common. Even in India, if you see, you know, there is a system of, you know, joint family. And it's very common that the parents of the boy and girl, they counsel, you know, their children when their married life doesn't go very well. And it is very good. Young people need that kind of an advice. But today, unfortunately, young people tend to think, you know, that we are independent and we don't want anybody's advice, blessing, all these things. So please, leave us alone. We want privacy. Okay? So obviously, they lose out not just on the blessings, but also on any good advice. And they are lost. So we see this happening so often. So, as I mentioned earlier, of course, it was not that in the Vedic times there was only arranged marriage. As we mentioned, there was Gandharva Vivaha. There was also love marriages which took place. Especially popular among the Kshatriyas. Especially among the Kshatriyas, love marriage was very common. Okay? Because the Kshatriyas had a lot of physical beauty, they had strength, they had passion. Kshatriyas, you know, their main, this thing is passion. You know, they run by passion. So it is very common to see love marriages among Kshatriyas as well. For example, even in the Bhagavatam, we see so many stories of love marriages. It's like, one of the classic examples is that of Maharaj Yayati and Devayani. You know, this Maharaj Yayati, he was a Kshatriya and Devayani was the daughter of Shukracharya. She was a Brahmana. So generally, according to the Vedic system, a Kshatriya man must never marry a Brahmana woman. That's called as Pratiloma marriage. That means it is said marriage must be between people of the same caste. Or the boy can be higher and the girl lower, but never vice versa. So it's not allowed. If the boy is higher and the girl is lower, that is also acceptable. The best is both being the same caste. But if the boy is higher and the girl is lower, even that is acceptable. But if the girl higher and boy lower, that's generally never acceptable. But anyway, it happens that this Devayani, you know, who was on a picnic with her friend Sharmishta, you know, she was put into a well and she was naked actually. So Maharaj Yayati was doing hunting in that area. So when he went to the well, he picked Devayani out of the well. And obviously when he picked her out of the well, you know, he offered his hand, and when she came out, she was not wearing any clothes. So at that time, Devayani immediately proposed to Maharaj Yayati that now that you have touched my hand, you have to accept me as your wife. So though Yayati was not acceptable, it was not acceptable to him, this proposal, because he knew that he is a Kshatriya and this girl is a Brahmana. But still, he was attracted to her also. So he couldn't say no. He married. So in this way, there was a, you know, you can call it as a love marriage, because it was just arranged by the two of them. You know, their parents did not arrange this marriage for them. So this way, there are cases among Kshatriyas. Because it was generally said that a Kshatriya could never say no to a woman. If a woman approached a Kshatriya and proposed, the Kshatriya dharma dictated that he cannot say no. Just like a Kshatriya cannot say no to war. He cannot say no to, you know, playing some gambling match. Similarly, he cannot say no to a proposal from a girl. When one of our boys, you know, who happens to be from some Maratha Kshatriya caste, he heard this, he became very happy, in fact. He asked one devotee, does it mean, Prabhuji, that if any girl proposes, we cannot say no? So the devotee, Prabhuji, he told him that, my dear friend, today people are Kshatriya by name only. Kshatriyas are those who can go to the war field and they can take happily on their chest, you know, the arrows or the weapons thrown from the opposite party. They will not run away. They are not fearful of their life. They can give their life at any time. And Prabhupada once mentioned that the last Kshatriya of India was some Rajput king, who it is said that during the British times he took an helicopter or something and he went to fight alone. So Prabhupada remarked that he was the last genuine Kshatriya, you know, who had the courage to go alone and fight. After him, the Kshatriya species is extinct. So, even if anybody considers himself of the Kshatriya caste, like Maratha or something in Maharashtra, please don't take this instruction very seriously. That a Kshatriya cannot refuse a girl. Okay. So, anyway, we see that, you know, such a marriage took place. But we see that whenever, you know, generally such marriages took place, you know, between kings in Kshatriyas, where they liked each other and by mutual consent they married, as long as they were attracted to each other on their bodily platform, they suffered like anything. Just like in the story of Maharaj Yayati, he was attracted to this Devayani and he married her. And later, of course, the story goes that he married Sharmishta also because he was attracted to her also. And he produced so many children from them. And later he did some mistake, because of which Shukracharya, Devayani's father, cursed him to be an old man. And then he also got the benediction that he could exchange his old age with any of his sons. So he did that with Puru and he got his young age back. And for 1,000 years, he enjoyed with Devayani and Sharmishta, sensual pleasures. But throughout these 1,000 years, though he enjoyed so much, in the end he was so frustrated. And, you know, he tells Devayani that all this sense enjoyment is useless. And he actually takes to the path of spiritual life. And he achieves Krishna, liberation in that very life. And Devayani also follows in his footsteps. Of course, that's why his story is in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam doesn't mention because of some love marriage. There are so many love marriages today. But the story is mentioned because they originally got attracted on a physical level. But later, they gave it all up. And they went towards the path of liberation. And that's the greatness. So, the point what we are trying to say here is that as long as the attraction remains just on a physical level between the husband and wife, they are not able to really fulfill the purpose of married life. You know, grihastha ashram, which is to keep Krishna in the center and to progress on the path of self-realization. They are unable to do that. And that's the point we are seeing here. Similarly, Bhagavata mentions other stories also of love marriages. Just like there is a famous story of Pururava and Urvashi. So, Pururava is the ancestors of the Pandavas. So this Urvashi, you know, she is the heavenly damsel. And again, they both were attracted to each other and they got married. Again, that also there was so much frustration. You know, they married, they enjoyed so much, but the problem, the enjoyment is not enough. No matter even if somebody enjoys with Urvashi. And finally, this Pururava also realizes and he gives up all the sense gratification and he achieves Krishna's feet. And he sings beautiful poems, which is called as the Aila Gita, which appears in the Bhagavatam. So we see this point, you know, that among Kshatriyas it was common that they would do Gandharva Vivaha, where they would marry each other by mutual consent. Just like another example that immediately comes to the mind is that of Maharaj Dushyanta and Shakuntala, you know, the daughter of Vishwamitra. So they also, you know, this Maharaj Dushyanta was traveling around and he met the Shakuntala and they married immediately there itself, Gandharva Vivaha, you know, just by lighting some small fire and something, exchanged rings, they married and they stayed together that night. And next day, Dushyanta went away and later she was pregnant and then she goes and says that I have your son Bharat, and so he accepts her. So in this way we see that the Kshatriyas, you know, it was very common for them to have such kind of love marriages. But the point is still there, that as long as that they were mutually attracted because of the external physical body, they suffered. Okay? Unless they were able to actually transcend it and go towards liberation. So it's very clear. When the goal of marriage, as we were pointing out in the beginning, is to uplift the consciousness of oneself, the wife, as well as the children. Unless one does that, as an institution, the marriage has failed, you know, that the purpose of the marriage has failed. And that's what we are seeing here. Okay. So whether one did a love marriage or arranged marriage, in either case, one had to come to this goal, otherwise one remained frustrated. One didn't fulfill the purpose. But still, arranged marriage was better for all these parameters. Because for one thing, it was not motivated simply by physical attraction. It was motivated as a matter of dharma, because one has to get married, one got, you know, by proper arrangement. And also because physical attraction was not just the parameter, so because of that, even when one came together, it was not that simply they were illusioned by looking into each other's face. Okay. But in love marriage, we see sometimes it has happened among the Kshatriyas that, you know, they were lost for some time in the mad world of sense gratification before they came to their senses and surrendered to Krishna. As far as today's situation is concerned, now till now we were talking about the Vedic times. If you come to today's modern world, you know, it's a very horrible situation. Because today people love, but they don't want to get married also. At least in the Vedic times we see, you know, whenever the Kshatriyas, you know, they fell in love with somebody, they immediately married. You know, just like this Maharaj Yayati and Devayani, when Yayati caught hold of the hand of Devayani, she said that now that you have touched my hand, you have to marry me. Means they had a culture at least. You know, today there is nothing like that, you know. You can just keep shaking hand and doing even more things with the opposite sex and still the thought of marriage will not even cross the mind. It is a very horrible situation actually. They want to only love, they want to have only sense gratification. Prabhupada once remarked when he went to the West that if milk is available easily in the market, why should one keep a cow? Prabhupada asked. That means, you know, if the milk is easily available, now, you know, nowadays milk is available in the market, 15 rupees a liter. Why to keep a cow? Well, to keep a cow, it is so much tension, you know. You have to maintain cow, give grass. So devotees didn't understand immediately what he is trying to say. And Prabhupada said, that is the situation of your Western civilization. Because sex is easily available, you don't want to marry and maintain a wife. Prabhupada said. You know, it's like milk is easily available, you know, then one doesn't want to keep a cow. Similarly, he said, in the Western civilization, association of opposite sex is so easily available. So one simply wants to enjoy without even getting married. And even if one gets married, it is only by mutual consent. In fact, this is predicted by the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the 12th canto, the Bhagavatam says, in the 12th canto, chapter 2, text 3, the predictions of Kali Yuga, it is said, Dampatya Biruchir Hetur. And the Bhagavatam says that marriage in Kali Yuga will increasingly take place only by mutual agreement. So, it's stated, it's prophesized. Just by mutual agreement. That means two people, the girl and boy, will agree because of mutual attraction and they will get married. You know? And this is what, and it is said that both of man and woman, manliness and womanliness, will be judged only according to expertise in sex life. How good they are at sex life, to that extent they are considered a man or a woman. Bhagavatam predicts it. And it is so true today. You know, who gets the most attention? The movie stars. Yeah, what are they basically? They are just, you know, some sex icons for the society. And that's what it is. So this is today's situation actually. So the present day scenario has become extremely hellish. You know, so it has. So what people generally tend to think today is that, you know, how can you marry a person unless you love that person? And how can you love somebody unless you know that person? And how can you know a person unless you stay with him and, you know, date with that person for some time? This is the modern psychology actually. So, though, you know, in modern times, people talk so much about love, love, love. Even, you know, outside marriage counselors who are there in the outside world, they recommend that husband and wife should every day keep telling each other like a mantra, I love you, at least one or two times a day. It is actually very artificial and external. If you see in the Vedic tradition, such things were never recommended. You know, even in our family's ancestors and all, it is not that our grandparents and great-grandparents, you know, had to tell each other, remind each other that I love you. You know, the wife served the husband by cooking food, by taking care of the house. The husband served her by buying her some clothing, jewelry, whatever, and gave her some children. And they were staying together, and in this way, love or whatever you want to call it, developed automatically. But in today's society, the externals are considered very important. You have to keep telling all these things. But the problem is the intensity with which they tell, I love you, with that same intensity, they very quickly tell, I hate you as well. And I want to divorce you. So that also they tell with the same intensity. You know? So they only talk so much of love, but actually there is no love. And in fact, that is the reason why they are talking so much, because there is insecurity. You know? In today's situation, you know, neither the husband or the wife is confident of the other partner's love unless they specifically say it. Actually, more than that, you know, the relationship between two people should be such that it is subtle, it is there in the heart. It need not be, you know, daily announced, you know, like a mantra or something like that. But this is the present day scenario in Kali Yuga, which is what is predicted, you know, and we see it is not working actually. You know, even though these people talk of so much love, there is so much separation and there is so much quarrel that is there increasingly between husbands and wife. And in fact, in the present day, though, it is becoming even worse. As I was mentioning earlier, people simply want to love, that's all. They don't even want marriage. So the concepts like live-in, etc. are becoming increasingly acceptable. In fact, in the Western society, it has become totally acceptable. You know, one devotee was giving a lecture, he was telling, 20 years back in America, the divorce rate was 75% divorce in 3 years. Today, he said, divorce rates have dropped. They have dropped. Divorce is much less in America. So he asked, do you know the reason why? The reason, he said, was nobody is marrying only. People are simply living together. Because people in America are feeling now that this divorce and, you know, separation of property, you know, you have to break the property. All this is so much headache. Better not to marry only. We simply stay together as long as we feel like, the day we feel like, we can just quickly walk out of the house. So that there is no problem of going to the court, lawyer, all these things. You see, that is the reason why divorce rates are coming down in America. And unfortunately, these concepts are actually quickly catching on. Even in India, in IT, BPO and all these places, it's quickly catching on actually. In the urban cities, yes, it is catching on. Live in. Just, you know, live like a dog for some time together and after some time go to another partner. So this is the philosophy actually. Okay. So, in fact, unfortunately these people do not know the kind of hellish punishments that await them. You know, if you see in the Bhagavatam in the 5th canto, the description of the hellish planets, there are almost 26 hellish planets and almost 50% of the hellish planets are devoted to punishments related to illicit sex. You will be very shocked. If you see the Bhagavatam, you know, the 26 hellish planets are there. So many hellish planets are for this only. You know, for somebody who has sex with an animal, somebody who has sex with an unmarried girl, somebody who has sex with a married woman. For all, there are different kinds of hells. So the Bhagavatam has mentioned all of this. So, of course, it seems that the hells will be quite full. You know, with so many candidates in the modern age, unfortunately, because they have chosen to do this kind of activity. So, another thing that, you know, the modern people who are, you know, in the, who speak about, who preach or who speak about love marriage, that You know, one should love a person, one should know a person before who marries. You know, they generally say that unless you know a person, how do you know the qualities of a person? How do you know whether the temperament matches? You know, people talk all these things. But actually, if you see, even when a young man, you know, he says that my temperament and qualities are matching with this young girl, it is not to be taken very seriously. Because most of the times, the so-called, first of all, the so-called temperament matches on the mental platform. You know, temperament is a situation of the mind and the mind changes. So today temperament is matching, tomorrow it need not match. Another thing is that, currently because mainly they are attracted to each other physically, they are feeling that temperament is matching. You know, but it is a biased outlook. But when the parents or an elderly person, when he sees, he can understand better whether their temperament will actually match or not match. Because he is unbiased. You know, when a parent or an elder, like the spiritual master or somebody arranges a marriage, he actually knows the temperament of both the people. So he is in a much better position to decide whether these two people's temperament is going to match or not going to match. Okay. But in the modern day, they simply say this, that's all, that our temperament matches so forth. Actually, they are attracted mainly on the physical platform. It is very simple, you know, if you tell this young man, okay, you are marrying this girl because of temperament match, but you know, if I put some acid on her face and you know, if something happens, will you still marry her? Obvious answer is no. Or you know, if she were a little ugly, you know, she got some big specs or something, then he would refuse the marriage. So it's very clear, he's not marrying for the temperament match, he's actually marrying for the external beauty, that's all. That's most often the case. So, first of all I told you, people generally say that, temperament should match and that we are in the best position to decide. So as I was telling you, it's not like that. An elderly person is in a much better position to decide this than oneself. And also, even the beauty that is there, you know, when one is attracted to each other, when the man and woman are attracted to each other because of the physical beauty and they decided to get married, even in this scenario, even this beauty which is there, surprisingly, the law of material world is such that there is satiation. You know, Prabhupada writes in the first canto, when Krishna is entering Dwaraka, so in the 10th chapter, you know, when Krishna enters Dwaraka, so at that time, all the residents of Dwaraka are coming to greet Krishna actually. And all of them are looking with great intensity at the face of Krishna. So the Bhagavata mentions that though all the residents of Dwaraka were seeing Krishna so regularly, because Krishna was there in Dwaraka only, but still, whenever Krishna would come out, everybody would come to the window to see the face of Krishna. Because the Lord, you know, any spiritual subject matters, you know, the Lord's name, form, pastimes, one never gets satiated by that. You know, there is no satiation. But in this material world, Prabhupada says, the law of satiation applies. That means, Prabhupada says, that anything material, that at first stroke appears very beautiful, after some time, the same thing, by repeatedly looking and interacting with that same object, doesn't look beautiful anymore. So this is a fact, this is a law of the material world. And because of this law, even if somebody would marry the, you know, so-called most beautiful woman of this earth, it is not that after, every day staying with her, every day when he looks at her, he will perceive her as similar beauty. No. Okay, he may perceive other ladies as beautiful, but not as this lady anymore. Because what happens, there is a law of satiation. He is going on looking at her every day, morning, evening. So he feels that, you know, not so beautiful, not attractive. And this is especially true in Kali Yuga, where people have lost all things like, even things like beauty, everything comes down as the age of Kali Yuga goes, you know. We are not talking here about some apsaras of the heavenly planets, you know, who are increasingly beautiful and so forth. So, there is this law of satiation, so one gets bored actually. And this is actually that happens with people who get married just because of physical attraction. Because that doesn't remain. It is actually good in one sense. The reason why it is good is, you know, sometimes, you know, unmarried boys ask us, you know, that what will happen, you know, if we get married, every day we have to see the wife and, you know, we may be bewildered by her beauty by seeing her daily. So the answer is it doesn't happen like that. You know, maybe for a couple months one may be attracted a lot. But as time progresses, you know, basically, the attraction will be there mainly in terms of the qualities of the person. and not on the externals. Because the externals don't appear beautiful anymore after some time, even if that person is beautiful. The others may perceive her as very beautiful, but not this fellow who is always staying with her. He feels she is just okay, that's all. Not some great person. So this is the way the law of material world works. So that's why it's good as well, you know, in one sense. Otherwise, there would be other problems. But anyway, so though one becomes satiated with one's wife, you know, whom one had, whom one loved a lot, so to speak, because of attraction, but the problem is, sex desire is not satiated. Because that is, as Bhagavad Gita says, Dushpurena Analena Cha. So the desire to have sex, kama, hridrogam, this disease of the heart, that never gets satiated. So one gets satiated only with a person, that opposite person. But the sex desire as such doesn't get satiated so soon. It is always ever increasing. Dushpurena Analena Cha. It is increasing. Like a fire in which you keep on putting fuel, it goes on increasing. So what happens? So, you can guess the outcome. One has married mainly because of attraction. But after some time, person is not so attractive. But the sex desire is going on increasing. So what happens? If you see today in the world, in Pune also if you see, maybe if you just look around, very often there are, various seminars and conferences being held. How to have better sex life after 40. How to have better sex life after 50. The reason is by the time people are 40, 50, the bodies are also so unattractive and they have got so bored with each other. Now sex has become a little boring. But at the same time, the desire for sex is increasing. So in these conferences, they discuss newer methods, how to enjoy the same old wine. And so many people flock to these conferences. And there are big, big PhD scholars who have done research in all these things, who give lectures. Seriously, there are PhDs in sex psychology and they give their own lot of money actually. So this is a foolishness actually. I mean, we can just see the dilemma of Kali Yuga. So of course, this is done by somebody who is relatively better off. People who are worser, they will think, "Arey, now this part, I want to have so much sex life, but my partner has become so boring, so let me look for another person." So this is what happens actually. So by increasing physical contact, one becomes bored. And one decides that, okay, now I will divorce and I will look for somebody else. Because this person is no longer attractive. So these are the things that happen and this is what is happening today. So the bottom line is this. As long as one is attracted simply on the external platform, one is in trouble. One has to transcend that quickly. Otherwise one is going to be in deep trouble. One will be frustrated. So this is the law of the material world. So I and you cannot do anything about it. It is a law, that's all. Because either the option is like Maharaj Ayati, even if somebody is there, it is not that he has no hope. Krishna consciousness is very powerful. Even such a person can come to Krishna and, he can get refined and, everything. So either he does that, or he remains frustrated and he performs sinful activity and go to hell. Only two options are there for such a person. That's all. Not much. So this is a fact. So, on the contrary, coming again back to the modern civilization of love marriages, this, increasing mixing of the opposite sexes which is there, is so much before marriage, that by the time person gets married, they have experienced all emotions with the opposite sex. There are various emotions that are there. Like sometimes there is love, sometimes there is fight. All these things they have already experienced and frustrated before they enter married life. So in the Vedic time what happens, when the boy and girl come together at whatever 20 or whatever age, first time they are meeting a party of the opposite sex. So they are quite excited also about it and they are quite committed to that whole act of marriage. Because they are saying, first time I got somebody, so let me be faithful and good. And they have started their relationship. So by the time the relationship peaks up and various problems start coming, they would have already reached the vanaprastha stage. And that is good at that time, to be frustrated with married life, so that you can renounce and you can devote more time to spiritual life. But today what is happening, right from the age of 9 and 10, boys and girls mix each other. By the time they get married at the age of 30, they have experienced everything. And they are already so frustrated, and they are not going to take vanaprastha. Because, first of all, there is no forest today, there is deforestation. And also they don't have any aptitude because they were never taught about what is forestation, about spiritual life. So they remain frustrated. They just fight like cats and dogs. So this is what happens. This is what is happening actually. So it's this separation of sex is very important. So even boys or men who want to get married, it is very important not to maintain any contact with the opposite sex till marriage. It's mandatory. The Bhagavatam says, Matra Shvasra Dhuitrava Navivittasana Bhaved Balavan Indriya Grama Vidvan Samapikarshati. Once you not even closely sit with one sister or daughter or even mother, it says. Because the senses are so strong that they cannot be trusted. Because even the mind of an intelligent man can be taken away. So the Bhagavatam is so strong. But on the contrary, we see today, people are very casual about it. So sometimes, if somebody says, this is my sister, we have to ask, is it a real sister? Then it's slightly okay at least. But sometimes, there are so many banaya who are sisters. Some neighbor, father's friend's daughter, that is also sister. So these kind of sisters are not acceptable. because you're playing with fire. So even boys, in the Vedic system, everybody who wants to get married also, it's complete mandatory for separation of the sexes. That means boys shouldn't mix with the girls and even vice versa. And at the time of marriage, for the boy, it should be the first girl, other than his sister and mother, whom he is coming in contact with. First. No previous case. And similarly for the girl also. The only man she knows intimately is her father. And maybe her immediate brothers, who are there at home. So obviously she knows them. But nobody else. No other casual friends talking. No, not at all. So this is mandatory. It's a must. It's not that one can just simply dally around with the opposite sex on by taking them together. It's very important. And after marriage also, the only person one knows intimately is the opposite sex. So even after marriage, if a married man wants to talk to some other woman, he must do that only in presence of his wife or maybe her husband. But he's not allowed to talk to her, another married lady in private. So these are the etiquettes which are taught by the Vedic culture. And these etiquettes are mandatory. And if one does not follow the etiquettes, then one will burn his finger. One will fall down. Because that's what it is. But the segregation of sexes which is there, which is recommended in the Vedas, it should be done with knowledge and not by force. Just to give you an example, when I was in school in Bombay, in my locality there were two schools. One was St. Pius and one was St. Mary's. So the St. Pius was the only boys' school and the St. Mary's is the only girls' school. So even according to Christian philosophy, obviously, separation is recommended. So in St. Pius, no girls would get admission, and in St. Mary's, no boys would get admission. But both were maybe just 500 meters away from each other. So though they managed to somehow separate the boys and girls by force, no knowledge was given to anybody, to neither the boys nor the girls, about the importance of this principle. So what happened? There was total chaos. When the St. Mary's school is leaving, all the boys are from St. Pius want to go there only. And vice versa. So that means what we see here is that it is not just important to separate, but separate with knowledge. So the most important is not just, just separating the two and making them burn with each other. When are you going to leave me? So the St. Pius and St. Mary's, even though these people separated, it was of no use actually. Both were mingling with each other before school and after school. At the school, they would keep thinking about each other and looking from the window when the other party is coming out. So it was useless. It was a useless endeavor of separating these two schools. So the point is that separation should be done with knowledge. So the boy, for example, is taught in the Gurukul by the Guru. He is made to understand the dangers of association of the opposite sex. He is made to understand the importance of spiritual life. He is made to understand the importance of celibacy. And when he understands all this, then he appreciates better why the separation is there. Otherwise, there is no point in simply physically separating. Okay? So we see, and Kali Yuga is such an unfortunate place that it's very difficult to come to the right path. It's so difficult. Coming to the last part about ISKCON as such, in our present day ISKCON, how marriages are arranged, So, as I was telling earlier, the marriage could be arranged either by the parents or by the guru or the seniors. Because they are in a better frame to understand, you know, what will actually match best. So, even right from, so many years, in fact all across ISKCON and so in every temple there is some kind of marriage board that functions. Because young men come to the temple and Mataji devotees, young Matajis also come. So, if no such facility is there, then they may want to mix with each other and, you know, try to find a partner. So, that's why such a central facility is there, which, you know, is useful for devotees. So, in fact, so, if somebody wants to get married through such an arrangement, it's considered a very noble cause. Because especially in Kali Yuga, if you see, you know, it's so important for husband and, you know, we need ideal examples, you know, just like you need ideal examples of brahmacharis, you know, who can be a beacon light for all the renunciants, you need even examples in the grihastha order, in the family order, you know, who can set an example for society at large. And in fact, the society in general can relate to Krishna consciousness more directly with grihasthas than with brahmacharis. Because, you know, the society, you know, like for example, you know, if somebody from outside, married family, he comes to the temple. You know, if he sees the brahmacharis or the sannyasis, he feels that, okay, after all, you know, they have given up everything and they are doing all this. This is not for people like us. You know, but when they see, you know, people who are married and who are, again, still following all the principles of Krishna consciousness, at least they can relate, they understand, oh, if he is doing then even, maybe even I am supposed to do. So, generally, Krishna consciousness is best understood to the society through the grihastha ashram. And so that's why it is a very noble cause, you know, when a devotee boy and a girl come together for marriage. So again, here also, if you see, the marriage is arranged by the seniors. For example, here the marriage is arranged by the counselors. So, you know, we have a marriage board, for example, here, where interested boys and girls give us biodata at a particular age. And we arrange their marriages. So, though the marriage is not arranged by their parents, it is still an arranged marriage only. You know, because it's arranged by the superiors. And again, they take care of everything. They see, because the superiors who are there, they understand the boys also and they know the girls also. They know exactly, you know, what kind of match would be best suitable for each other. So, it is very important even when somebody goes through such a marriage board, not to be very critical, you know, or to be very, you know, concerned about nitty-gritties. Means, you know, sometimes people are extremely critical. Like, you know, somebody says, you know, I don't want a wife with a specs or, you know, something like that. Which, you know, is very critical about some point. And he, you know, he keeps rejecting various proposals for various silly reasons. So, one should be very careful. One should take a lot of advice from seniors and then do it. Otherwise, one can get into trouble actually. And also we see that, you know, most often boys who come to the marriage board asking for their marriages to be arranged, you know, everybody wants a very beautiful, you know, girl. And just like there was one boy who recently came and he was rejecting most of the proposals because he felt that none of the girls that were coming were very beautiful according to his estimation. So he was asked a question, you know, what do you prefer? You want a beautiful girl who is having slightly bad qualities or you want somebody average looking but with all good qualities? So he said that I want a beautiful girl with all good qualities. So this is called as, you know, somebody wants the cake and eat it too. Means, you know, you want everything. But the material world is such that nobody gets everything actually. Nobody gets everything. Now, we may have a concept just like simple thing, you know, somebody wants a job. You know, you want a job that is high paying, at the same time not too time sucking. You know, so we have so many of our conditions in our mind of what we want from the material world. But it's very difficult to get like that. You have to settle down for somewhere. So one has to put one's priority very clearly. Unless one done that, one can get into trouble. So of course, we have a lot of marriages that are being arranged. And it has been very wonderful. In fact, many devotees have got, so many devotees have got married through the marriage board with this temple, and they are doing very well in their Krishna consciousness. We see even Prabhupada's case, you know, just to tell about Prabhupada's story. Srila Prabhupada also we see that when Prabhupada's marriage was arranged by Srila Prabhupada's father, initially Prabhupada did not like his wife so much. He told his father that, you know, I don't like her so much. And Prabhupada, in fact, arranged another marriage on his own. Means, you know, he saw a girl from another family and he himself arranged that marriage. And he spoke to the girl's parents, and because in those days in India also, a man could marry many wives. It's only after independence that certain rules were introduced that you cannot, polygamy was abolished. But otherwise, pre-independent India, it was allowed for a man to have, and Vedas also allow it. So Prabhupada had fixed another girl actually. And Prabhupada, when he told his father that, you know, I am not so attracted to this wife I have, so that is why I have thought of fixing another girl for myself, a second wife. So Prabhupada's father told him, no, don't do it, don't do like that. So Prabhupada's father told Prabhupada that it is good that you don't like her so much. That is good from a spiritual viewpoint. Because if you like this wife too much, you would get too attached to her. And if you get too attached to her later in life for your spiritual advancement, that attachment may become very difficult to cut. So this is what he instructed. And Prabhupada immediately accepted it. He said, yes, fine. If you are telling me not to marry again, I will not marry. And later Prabhupada says, I was thankful to my father for his good advice. Okay. So we see here how, you know, everybody faces such situations, you know, in life where, you know, one feels that I need to get married in this particular way or something like that. So in conclusion, we see that we have been discussing broadly about, we started off talking about what is Vivaha. The most important, the meaning of the word Vivaha basically is to uplift one's spiritual consciousness and that of the entire family. And we saw how in the Vedic system there were 8 types of Vivaha. You know, 4 were arranged marriages and there was some love marriage or there was some kidnapping kind of cases. Of course, when I'm talking about kidnapping, I wanted to tell actually, even Krishna, for example, kidnapped Rukmini. You know, that was also a case of Gandharva Vivaha. But then again, that was not exactly Gandharva because, Rakshasa Vivaha, kidnapping. Because there, Rukmini was also attracted to Krishna and she had told Krishna that, you know, you come and kidnap me. And of course, it is between the Lord and his pure devotees, so it's fine. It's in fact a wonderful pastime which we read in Krishna book and we relish it. So there were so many types of, you know, Vivaha, 8 types of Vivaha that were mentioned. We spoke about the Vedic marriage system, how either the parents or the spiritual master would arrange the marriage. At a very young age, before one attained puberty, it led to a lot of security, slowly developed love among the partners. I was also speaking about how in today's world there is so much talk of love, but actually nobody loves anybody. Only love, 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 they keep talking, that's all. But love is not there, there is only hate. But formerly in Vedic system, there was not so much talk of love. But the love was there. So, this is the situation. Then we also spoke about, you know, Vedic love marriages. Just like Kshatriyas would often do it. You know. But we again saw that as long as they were on the bodily platform of this so-called love, they suffered. You know. And only when they transcended it, they became happy. Like Maharaj Yayati. You know? Then we saw today's situation, which is very hellish. Where people only want to love and, you know, have sex life. But they are not even committed to marriage. They are not committed to important things of married life, like having children. Today, for example, if you see, you know, increasingly in the world, people are not having children. And especially in the Western world, they marry and they don't want only to have children actually. That's why in many Western countries, population is said to be decreasing. In Europe, Australia and all these countries. Because they simply want to enjoy sex life. Because, you know, when you have children, there is so much difficulty in bringing a child up. But they don't want that responsibility. They only want enjoyment. And in fact, some countries like Australia, they have recently appealed to the people. Everybody should have at least 3-4 children. Otherwise, our population will go down and become zero. They have appealed. And now Australian government, for example, has announced $5,000 for each child born. The parent will get. Still, people are not interested. They are saying, we don't want $5,000. We want to enjoy sex life only, without children. So, this is a horrible situation. So, we also spoke about how, you know, the so-called love marriage, it doesn't last so much because there is a law of satiation. One gets bored seeing the same face repeatedly on a material level, you know. So that means it's very important in marriage, you know, for the husband and wife to come close mentally, spiritually, etc., and not simply on a physical level. Because that will lead to so much boredom that one will want to leave this person and try out somebody else. Or one will keep attending various conferences, like what I spoke, are arranged in Pune. Then we spoke about how the separation of sexes which is there, it is very good. And ideally speaking, a boy or a girl at the time of marriage only should come to know anybody intimately of the opposite sex. Till then there is no contact. So even for all of us, you know, who are working in the outside world in software companies and all that, we have to be very careful with the opposite sex. You know, because they may not know about it. Today it's very, you know, okay, come, let's go for a walk and all that, you know. Sometimes after lunch we see, you know, in software companies, you know, people are walking around the campus. So sometimes boys and girls, you know, they're simply chatting and walking around. You know, they may be in the same project or whatever. So even devotees, it happens actually. There are so many cases where even with devotees, sometimes, you know, they have a project colleague who is a Mataji. And she tells that, you know, let's go for a walk after lunch. It will seem very casual and normal. And in fact, they talk as if, you know, you shouldn't bother about all this. No formalities, nothing and all that. But the truth is that they are playing with fire. And they fall down also, very casually. So one has to be very careful. As devotees, we are very careful actually. When we are working outside, we are very careful in association with them. You know, we may talk to them official things, but nothing more. You know, nothing more. It has to be very clear and cut. We have to be very convinced about it ourselves. Otherwise, we can also get lost. There are so many cases of devotees getting lost because of this. Because they were not careful. They just played with fire. And the Shastra says, this is fire, don't touch it, we shouldn't touch it. If you touch it, you will get burnt. It's a law. We cannot escape it. Then we also spoke about how the separation of sexes that are there, it has to be done with knowledge. Otherwise, like, you know, the Christian schools, they separate. But it is of no use, because they are simply waiting for each other. They pounce at any given opportunity, like a hungry tiger who has been kept away from the deer, artificially, without knowledge. Then we also spoke about how in our society, marriages are arranged. Okay? Then a marriage is a very noble cause, as I told you, because it's only through the Grihastha Ashram that society at large can understand what is Krishna consciousness and how to apply it in their life. Because they cannot understand, seeing from the renounced order, how to apply Krishna consciousness in my life. They can take inspiration from them, but they cannot really understand how to put it, you know, because it works differently. We also gave the example of Srila Prabhupada himself. So in conclusion, we would like to say that the most important aspect of Krishna consciousness of married life is to become Krishna conscious. For the husband and wife both, you know, to do Mangala Arati together, to read Bhagavatam together, to, you know, relish spiritual life together. You know. Of course, there is material life also. There is sex life because they will have children. But that is secondary. That's not the most important thing. Okay. And by living like this, they can easily transcend, you know, the conditionings, the modes of material nature, and they can come to a perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. So this is the actual goal of married life. Unfortunately, nobody knows this in the world today. So as devotees, it is the prime responsibility of devotees who get married to understand these things properly and set the right example for the world. Because the world is looking forward for such examples. There is such a lack of it in the world today. So, the arranged marriage, as I was telling you in conclusion, is always better than the love marriage, because there is the intervention of the superiors. They know, they are able to judge better whether the match will actually work or it will not. Okay. And even when the, you know, marriage is fixed between a boy and a girl, it's always recommended that contact should be as minimal as possible. You know, it happens sometimes, you know, that a marriage is arranged between a boy and a girl, and before getting married, they start talking to each other so much and they fight so much that they call off the marriage. So this is actually the fact that on a material platform, as long as we remain on the material platform, you know, whether it is boy and whether in any kind of relationship between our friends or between the spouse, there is bound to be quarrel and fight and hypocrisy. And that is the age of Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So we cannot simply blame the age, saying that after all this is the age of quarrel, what can I do? It was our fault that we were born in such an age, otherwise long back we would have gone back to Godhead. You know, we were sleeping when everybody else was going back to Godhead. So that's why we are here today. So it's our responsibility to act against the influence of the age. And Krishna, seeing the sincerity of the devotee, will help the devotee overcome the faults. Okay. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna. So, I think I have ended 10 minutes early. I had time till 6:45. So we can have some questions, if there are. So somebody can pass the microphone.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yeah.
Hare Bhalpur. We are very grateful that you have narrated very nicely about arranged marriage and love marriage. And still I had a doubt about this thing. Actually, in parents' point of view, generally they appreciate and they accept also love marriage to some extent. But regarding a note is Vedas, no, they if Vedas they appreciate is about the caste system. Generally some the caste the parents know they betray one his son, especially in son. They're having son, they don't know if that opposite sex is in different caste. So it doesn't allow you should not marry this is of different caste. So can you speak something about caste system, about marriages related to marriage?
See, the concept is right, at least theoretically, because the caste indicates one's qualities. For example, a Brahmana is generally in the mode of goodness. Kshatriya is in the mode of goodness and passion, prominently passion. Vaishya has ignorance also, along with passion. And the Shudra is prominently in the mode of ignorance. So if there is a, in the boy and the girl, one is a Brahmana and another is Shudra, there is going to be trouble. Because one is in the mode of goodness and one is in the mode of ignorance. So their needs are different. Understood? Their needs are different. So when they come together, they are going to have trouble. One is in the mode of passion and one is prominently in the mode of goodness. There is trouble again. So this is the, standard, Vedic standard, where it is recommended that the same caste marriage should be there. Because it indicates a caste not just indicates the birth or anything, it indicates one's own nature. So somebody of a particular caste is generally of that nature. Okay? So that is why we have Aniloma marriage and Pratiloma marriage. Where a boy, it is allowed for him to be of a higher caste than the girl. That is acceptable. Because if the boy is of the higher caste and the girl is of a lower caste, the boy always being superior and dominating in a married relationship can bring the girl up. But if the girl is of a higher caste and boy of a lower caste, there is going to be more problem. And that is called as Pratiloma marriage. Like Maharaj Yayati married Devayani, who was a Brahmana. Now, this is the traditional Vedic system. Today's world, actually, to tell you the truth, it's very complex and topsy-turvy. Because the caste system exists on paper, but not truly. Can we honestly say that those who are Brahmin family born are in the mode of goodness? Not at all. Not at all. Just like Devamrit Maharaj once, he said a nice joke. Devamrit Maharaj was an ISKCON sannyasi, so he was in New Zealand. So in New Zealand, he was counseling some Indian families. So there were two Indian families who had newly started coming to Krishna consciousness, Gujarati families. So it had happened that one of the families was Brahmana and other was non-Brahmana. And this Brahmana family, Gujarati Brahmana family, the boy was in love with the girl of the non-Brahmana Gujarati family. And they had illicit connections and the girl was pregnant. So, the girl's parents were saying that now this boy should marry our girl. Because he has impregnated her, he must marry her. But the boy's parents were saying, no, we are from Brahmana family, how can we marry your daughter? So, they went to Devamrit Maharaj for counseling. The boy's side said that, we cannot marry this girl because she is not Brahmin, we are Brahmin. The girl's side said, no, he has had an affair with our girl and now she is pregnant, he has to marry. So, Devamrit Maharaj told the boy that Brahmana boys do not impregnate unmarried girls. I told him. Brahmana boys do not impregnate unmarried girls. So you marry her. So it is very clear. So that means, today what's happening is, so it's such a simple concept actually, but nobody knows this. They think that just because I'm Brahmin. So today's society is very topsy-turvy. That's why in ISKCON primarily, we don't give so much importance to the caste per se, but we give more importance to what that person is now, which anybody can understand. For example, in our system, where you have counselor with, devotees, we can easily understand being with one person, what is nature, how is he, and so forth. And by that, we can truly understand his actual caste, than what his caste certificate says he is. Somebody may be born even of a Shudra family, but he may be very much in the mode of goodness, and he may be equal to a Brahmana in terms of his true stature, and vice versa. So this is the situation. So the concept of this caste that is there in India today for marriages, this is because of this traditional concept that has been there. But unfortunately, the problem is that the entire caste structure, the foundation is broken. Because nobody is doing garbha and samskar. Because brahmanas can be born only, you know, this garbha and samskar, which Prabhupada talks about, where the husband and wife must come together after, means they must have sex only after doing some purificatory ceremony. This is called garbha and samskar. That means before you have sex, you perform some purificatory ceremonies to invite a soul who's of a higher cadre. Garbha and samskar is very important actually. It is not that only Prabhupada speaks about it in his purports. You know, like I have spoken to various Brahmana families, you know, even material Brahmana families, little old people, the previous generation, and they have told that actually it is there in India traditionally. Yes, everybody has to follow this garbha and samskar. But today people are not following. They go to a movie theater and then they have sex life. So how can they invite a noble soul? They will invite some rascal only, correct? Yeah, so from birth if he is like that, then what can be done? Half the thing is lost actually. Of course, no matter how much a rascal a person is, he can still be reformed. Krishna consciousness is powerful. But still even the input matters, the input has been very good. Then, you know, you don't need to do much on it to bring a better output, correct? So nobody is doing garbha and samskar today. So Brahmana is not there only. Higher castes are gone. So kalau shudra sambhavet, everybody is shudra basically. You know, by qualification. Okay. But still, this arranged marriage concept is there. I would still, of course, still say that even in a material circle, you know, when parents arrange the marriage, even outside if you see, it is better than people getting married themselves. It is. Because when they do that, that is still, you know, there is some vision at least. Of course, unless one becomes devotee, everything is useless, you know. But still, relatively speaking, for a stable society. Any other question? Okay, I think I have a question here, so we'll take that. Oh, there are too many. We have time. Huh? I don't know why people don't want to ask. Personally. Okay, anyway. In arranged marriage, everybody is looking horoscope match. Does this really matter in real life? It does. Because horoscope does indicate a person's qualities, his karma, etc. So, it's not, it is perfectly okay to do this. And it is not a science which is totally lost. It is still there. And there are genuine practitioners of, you know, who match horoscopes, etc. So if somebody is matching, even among devotees, it's considered perfectly okay. Because it's not that we strongly recommend that horoscope must be matched. It's not like that. But if somebody wants to match, it's considered absolutely fine. Because though we have become devotees, we are still not out of the purview of our karma. You know, karma is still controlling us. So also from the horoscope, you can find out various things like good period, bad period, etc. according to one's karma, which is always true only. So it is certainly a recommended thing to match the horoscope. Yeah? Can a mic go to somebody who is asking?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Prabhuji, suppose there is a love with there is a boy who has love with the girl, and then
can you speak slowly and into the mic?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, suppose a case is like that, a boy loves the girl and the parents are also agreed that relation between them. Whether this will go for the long run, means what type of marriage you call this? Arranged marriage or love marriage? Sir?
See, the point, the as far as the definition goes, you know, if the boy and girl have arranged it themselves, it's the Gandharva Vivaha, you know, in Sanskrit, which is called as a love marriage. Means, where nobody elders have arranged it. It's arranged by the boy and girl. When the boy likes some girl, but he did not go to her directly, he asked the girl's father, and the father decided whether to give her or not, then it is still considered an arranged marriage only. But when it is totally mutual, it's considered Gandharva Vivaha, technically, which means they have arranged it themselves. The parents nowadays agree because they know that the boy is anyway going to do it, so they agree for anything. See, please understand, the bottom line is this. The bottom line is that, you know, when the marriage is there and when two people are going to stay together, mainly because of sexual attraction, they can get into trouble. They have to follow rules and regulations and learn to transcend it. They have to. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble. They'll be very embarrassed. At the age of 50 and 60, they'll be going for counseling of how to have better sex and taking pills like Viagra. This is a modern society. So one has to learn self-control. This is the bottom point. That means one has to transcend just the physical attraction, which is a part of marriage, but which is not the most important part. The most important part is the spiritual component, especially from a spiritual viewpoint. Correct? So this is what I'm saying. Yeah? We'll take some questions here. If anybody wants, you can raise your hand as well. Okay, if the boy and girl are married already by the method of love marriage, and if they are coming in the association of devotees, is there any hope for them? It is not some totally, you can keep this here, it is not any totally hopeless case or any. Krishna consciousness is very powerful. Jagai and Madai became devotees. And in America, all the most... Of course, Prabhupada arranged some marriages, but so many marriages were arranged by them only, and they came to Prabhupada. They were not even married actually. You know, so many couples would come to Prabhupada, the hippies, and Prabhupada would say, okay, now that you have come together, you get married. Huh? Don't stay together like that only. It was all, you know, where people they had already arranged. You know, so it is not that, you know, one has gone to hell already. It's nothing like that. Okay? So, why not? There are so many devotees who have had, you know, a love marriage, and they are doing very well in their Krishna consciousness. They are doing very well. On the contrary, there may be cases also whose marriage was arranged and, you know, they are fighting like cats and dogs. You understand this point? The main point, so like we were giving the example of Yayati. He had a love marriage, but later he came to Krishna consciousness. That's why he's being glorified here. Correct? Yayati and Devyani, Pururava Urvashi, all the examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam that we have, they were love marriages who later came up and became very wonderful devotees. Then is the conclusion that we can also have love marriage, we can go around flirting? No, not at all. Because it's very dangerous. It's not recommended. That's not the way. There is more chaos, there is more chance of disaster than hope. So it's better not to venture in it. It's better than one, because Shastra recommends that one should not dilly-dally with women. Because how can a person have a love marriage? Only when he is roaming around with the party of the opposite sex, checking them out, whether this is suitable, whether this is suitable, whether this is suitable. This mentality is not encouraged by the Shastra, so we should not do it. But if somebody has already done it, there is no stopping him from being a devotee. It's not that he has gone to hell already because he did that. But he has to overcome all his conditionings, you know, all his, you know, whatever he has done before. Is it clear? Yeah? Whoever asked this question, is that point clear? Whoever asked this question, that's important.
I want to ask a question.
Okay, you can ask related. Okay, ask any question.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. My question is that during marriage ceremony, like Brahmanas are called and they chant some mantras. So, we see in today's scenario that Brahmanas may not be so much qualitatively. So, does it have effect on that mantras or something? So, I want to ask you in short that, the like consciousness of that person will have the effect on that or not?
Oh yeah, certainly. The priest's potency is very important. No doubt about it. The priest who performs the marriage, you know, how much he believes in it and his potency, it's certainly very important. So that's why in devotee circles there are so many devotees who have learnt the mantras of marriage and they perform marriages. And many of our devotees have got married with a devotee priest only who has learnt Vaishnava mantras. And the advantage of these devotee priests are that they know the meanings of the mantras and they tell the meaning also to the boy and girl. So even when the boy and girl in the marriage, when they are saying some mantras, they are not getting bored. Otherwise, in the material world, you know, people get bored. I have seen actually in material world, many people who get married, they sometimes, you know, the boy gives some money to the pujari and he tells, kam mantra bolne ka, jaldi khatam karo. Because he himself doesn't believe in any of it And that pandit also doesn't believe in anything. He simply wants money. He says, "Theek hai, kitna kam bolne ka bolo? 5 minutes mein khatam kar deta hu. And I finish in 5 minutes the whole affair. And you know, go and enjoy." So this is the situation. So we have devotee priests who perform nice marriages, and they also, after every line, they tell the meaning to the boy and girl. So you know, the boy and girl understand some things, you know, because certain meanings are very powerful actually. And when you see, when you understand that, you say, "Oh, I am really making a big commitment." It's good.
Yeah.
Okay. In Vedic life, there was child marriage, but if before getting puberty the boy dies, then the whole life of girl is destroyed. What was the arrangement? Good question. See, one thing we understand is that this material world disaster can come at any time. As it is said, even on a royal road one can have accidents. You heard that saying? There are accidents even on a royal road. So you can have an arranged marriage, perfect astrology match, this, that, but still it can lead to some chaos. Because this is the nature of the material world after all. So you see, we are trying to do the best thing, but calamity can strike any time. That is not ruled out. And by the way, the boy can die even after married in, you know, later stage. Even when, suppose, 25 and 22, when they get married, at that time also the boy can die. You know, just like in the Bombay bomb blast which we had recently, there were many young men who died actually, you know, who were very young, newly married actually. I saw some report. Some of them were very newly married, you know, 1 year, 2 years married, they died. So that is the material world. You cannot help that. So that these things do happen. Well, as far as this particular question is concerned, what about the girl? It is generally said that if the girl has not yet conceived, you know, the girl doesn't have a child, then she is allowed to remarry. But if the girl already has a son, a child, even one child, she is not allowed to remarry. You know, because if a girl already has a child, then she shouldn't marry another again. Because she has a child already, that child can protect her after the child grows up. So, but, you know, if the death occurred before they coming together and child was born, marriage was allowed. Now, you see, we have to try to understand, you know, when we are talking about Vedic times, we shouldn't think Vedic times was the last 200-300 years. See, because if you see in last 200-300 years back in India, many of the systems were very rigidly followed in a very cruel manner. Like for example, Sati. It's a Vedic system. But you know, in the last 200-300 years, there have been cases where, you know, the boy died and, you know, they put the girl in fire. You know, girl is saying, "I don't want to die." You know, they put her. That is not Sati. The girl has to voluntarily go. So what has happened is, in the last some years in India, you know, the system has become corrupt, because Kali Yuga has already begun 5,000 years back, not in the last 200-300 years. So system is already getting corrupt slowly day by day. So many times what happens, you know, when we talk about previous age, people think that previous age was 100 years, 200 years back. And they see that previous 200 years back in India, there were so many social evils. And they think that all those social evils were because of these kind of systems. But they fail to understand, when we are talking about Vedic time, we are talking 5,000 years back. When, you know, before the advent of Kali. And things have already started deteriorating since the last so many years, and it is getting worse by the day. That's all that is happening. It's getting worse by the day. You understood that? So we shouldn't relate with some immediate evils. Like for example, you know, some years back in I think there was this Jyotiba Phule and all these personalities in Maharashtra, you know, who fought for women's education, you know, or if some woman wanted to learn something, people would throw stones at her. So please don't think this is a Vedic system. No, in Vedic system, women were also quite well educated. You see, Kunti Maharani, she is offering such first class prayers. She is obviously, you know, well trained, you know, in a known specific way. So what has happened in the last some years in India, we shouldn't take that as, you know, the pure Vedic system. So there were many evils, like whatever we know of. So we'll take some questions. If anybody has, okay. We have time till 7:30, no? Question answer.
Hare Krishna Babu.
What time question answer should get over? 7? I thought it was 7. You can answer Subramanian Prabhu. I think he told me 7. Just confirm once. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Babu, you told that fourth kind of marriage in which groom used to give some money to the father of the girl. So what is the concept behind that? Because if the money is the motive, then what is the
that way? That was not, that was one of the non-recommended styles. but it was there. I mean, sometimes the girl's father was very poor, and he had many girls, so some rich man would come and give money, he would give his girl away. It is very bad. It is considered one of the non-recommended techniques, not a recommended technique. Okay? It is technically called as Asura Vivaha. So it was not considered recommended. 7, huh? Okay, fine. So we just have 8 minutes more.
I just wanted to ask question with relation to this. Like today we see the dowry system. Dowry. Giving money to boys.
Yes.
So, like, in Vedas also we see that some examples, not exactly...
Yeah, dowry
money,
system is properly recommended system. The idea behind this dowry is that, the girl should have some protection. See, because in the Vedic system, the girl doesn't receive any inheritance, you know. So, when the girl is getting married, she is given some money, jewelry, whatever, so that it can be as a protection. So, if some problem comes in life, she can use that money. It was a fixed deposit. It was a kind of a protection for the girl. And it was given voluntarily, happily, according to the status of the family. Not that, you know, you burn the wife and say, get dowry. That is a perverted. And that's what I was saying. In India, in the last 200-300 years, so many things have become perverted. So, it seems that this is the way it should be done. But this is not what is recommended. The Vedas don't say that you should burn the girl to get the dowry. But this is a perverted implementation of the true system. The true system is given happily according to one status one gives. And people are acceptable, fine, that way. Yeah? Yes, mic can go.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, in Vedic system, what was the reason behind polygamy marriages?
Polygamy marriages was because generally woman population was more than man population, ideally speaking. Generally, of course, today it is somewhat the other way in modern society because they are killing girl children in the womb. But normally, if you allow society to remain the way it is, women are more. And many men become brahmacharis. They don't marry. So there are so many women and there are lesser men. So each woman must get married. But each man does not marry. So, there is a mismatch. So, some men were allowed to take more. But it is not so much recommended from a spiritual viewpoint actually. From a spiritual viewpoint, that's why we consider the example of Lord Ramachandra. Eka Patni Vrata. One wife he took. So, that's considered a better from a spiritual viewpoint. See, from a material viewpoint, certain things may be good. Even from a material Vedic society viewpoint. But from a spiritual viewpoint, when you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, such bondage is better to limit it instead of increasing it. Correct? Okay, we'll take some questions quickly, whatever are there. If goal of life is to uplift consciousness and go back to Godhead, then why does Vedic literature support polygamy marriage? Okay, I've answered it. The same answer. Where the Swayamvar falls? Very good question. Where does Swayamvar falls? See, the Swayamvar falls essentially in the girl choosing. See, because in the boy and girl marriage, it is a kind of a love marriage only. Because Swayamvar means what? One girl wants to get married, especially Kshatriyas, princess. And all kings are invited. So which kings come? Those who want to marry her, those who like her, they only are going to come. If they didn't like her, why should they come? So many eligible candidates come, who all are interested in marrying this girl. And the girl is given a choice. Now you marry whomever you want. So it's kind of a Gandharva Vivaha only, where the boy and girl liked each other and that's why they married. It was among Kshatriyas, then this kind of Swayamvara. And what you see mainly in the Swayamvara is that the girl's option is more important. Because as I was telling you earlier, woman psychology dictates that a person to whom she gives her heart, she will remain committed to that relationship throughout. So that's why she was given a choice. She could marry whomever she wanted. And obviously everybody liked her, that's why they came. So it's mutual attraction again. Yeah? We'll take some more. Could you speak something about gay marriage? Oh. So, this is, the Kali Yuga perversion that has been increasing. Gay marriages. It's legalized in various states, in United States and many countries. Where, this is horrible actually. Actually, this, homosexuality is a perversion. It's a kind of a disease. Of course, you cannot tell this outside. People will kill you actually. Because they say it's natural. In fact, nowadays there are theories. There is a new theory that has come. I was shocked when I read it. This theory states that every man is bisexual by nature, it says. That means everybody is attracted to both sex originally. Like we say, Nitya Krishna,
everybody has love of Krishna originally. That's why these people are promoting a new philosophy. That everybody is attracted to both sexes originally, but currently only attraction to one sex has become manifest. You know, this is all horrible. This is all Kali Yuga perversion and degradation. You know, there is no such something supported in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam only mentions that homosexuality began right from the, you know, third canto. There is a description about it, where, you know, there were some demons who were created by Brahma from his backside, and the demons were attracted to Brahma for homosexuality. You know, so it's there. It's there, but it's considered a perversion. It's like this, you know, the more one keeps enjoying sex life, you know, the more one gets frustrated, disgusted, and one wants to enjoy various perversions. So it happens over lifetimes, actually, such conditionings. And, you know, sometimes people, what is because of homosexuality? Nowadays, people are sometimes attracted even to have sex with animals. You know, with a dog or, you know, like Prabhupada writes in one place, sometimes women want with a dog and a man wants with a cow out of such desperation. Sex life. So these are all horrible perversions. You know? So, even in Prabhupada times, if somebody was a homosexual and he approached Prabhupada with some guidance, then Prabhupada said that you should get married to a woman. Otherwise, stay alone. That was the suggestion. Okay, this is a big subject matter. It can be discussed sometime. Some exponents may get married within 1 year. I cannot understand some questions. Okay, Swayamvar we spoke about. What should be the result if one boy will not marry and he will not join Brahmachari Ashram? Oh. This is not recommended. The fifth ashrama, which is the bachelor ashram, it's not recommended because everybody should be under some control. See, there is a virtue of marriage. The virtue of marriage is that the wife controls. You know, women have an ability that once they get married, they keep a very, strong watch on their husband. And husband will come late, they'll ask, why did you come late? What happened? What were you doing? Till 8 o'clock you had work? Okay, fine. Means they keep track of the movements of the man. And he's protected. It's very good. It's very good. Because if the track is not kept, then this fellow can go haywire. You know? So, the point is, to whom is such a person accountable? See, if you join Brahmachari Ashram, you know, the temple president or the Brahmacharis, ideally in a Vedic system, the guru, he's looking. You know, and even if you don't get up one day morning, you know, you're caught. And if you are married, the wife is there with a stick who is always looking at the husband. So if one does not marry or neither joins, then who is going to look after him? Means who will protect him from, fall downs? So it's very, especially in today's environment, if somebody stays outside and doesn't get married, there is a lot of chance to fall to illicit sex. So that's why one should marry. Please explain the argument that arranged marriage is planned murder and love is suicide. I have not ever heard about this argument. I don't know. Arranged marriage is planned murder and love is suicide. I don't know. No comments. I don't know about this. I think this is looking like some kind of slogan coined by some person. The Vedas don't mention anything about this. At least I have not heard. Maybe I can ask. As per Vedic society, till the age of 25, a student remains under the guidance of guru and used to get married after 25 years. But if we see pre-independence era, we see that there is a child marriage before 25 years and husband and wife stay together before 25 years of boy, although it is generally up to 20 years. How to understand Vedic principle matched with pre-independence era marriages? It's a good question actually. It's a good question. So we see that both these things are there. One thing we see is that the division which is there, you know, 25, 50, 75, this is a rough kind of a calculation that is made, you know, which is said. That the first part of one's life, one is trained under the guru. Second part, one is married. Third part, you know, one goes to the forest. And fourth part, one takes sannyas. But if you see strictly, it was not obeyed also by everybody in society. For example, you know, maybe somebody was still a guru only till a particular age, 16 or 17. Okay. So, especially the marriage before puberty
was mainly for the girl, not for the boy. Means, it was more from the girl's viewpoint that she had to be married by 12 or 13. The boy could be 20, 21. Like we see in Prabhupada's case also. Prabhupada was in third year or final year in his college. He was about 20. And his wife was 11. So you see that. You know. So the boy would generally be about, even if he would be 20, the girl had to be 11 or something. Okay. The girl had to be young in age. So this was the situation where there was a 8, 9 years gap. You know. So, of course, I have not heard any support of, you know, very small children marriage, like 6 and 4 or something. Though this was practiced in India some years back. But there is no Vedic authentication to it. What it is said is that a girl must be married before puberty, and that is generally at the age of 12. By the age of 12, generally women attain puberty. So that is the age for a girl. And the boy is obviously at least 7, 8 years elder. So he is obviously 16, 17 or maybe even 20 that way. Is taking dowry sinful? It's not. But it should not be forced. Not that somebody demands, you know, I will burn the girl if I don't get dowry. That is sinful. When someone wishes to marry, then parents are not allowed to marry with devotee girl. At that time, what should we do? Good question. We could tell them that we are going to join the ashram. Then they will tell, please marry anybody. They say, okay, I have a choice. Many devotees have tried it out and it has been very successful. See, I think that another way I could answer this is like this, that see, in outside world, if people, you know, love somebody and they are so strong, they go against their parents and they marry and so forth, those of us who have understood the importance of Krishna consciousness and understood the importance of getting married to a devotee wife, because otherwise, you know, if you marry some outside girl, you know, right from first day you'll have trouble, because you know, she'll want to go to a movie and honeymoon and so many things, and you know, you'll be in total chaos what to do. So it's a matter of life and death to get married to a devotee. So my point is, if an outside person, you know, who's blinded by external love, he can be so strong on his point, as a devotee, why can't we be strong? Okay. And at least in my experience, I've seen that eventually parents agree to whatever a person does. You know, they may shout a little in the middle, but we have to make them understand. For this, some counseling, things like this, you have to take personal guidance for it. How to handle. Because every situation is different, every home is different. There are cases where sometimes parents are extremely harsh. And, you know, they say that we will kill and all that. Then in those cases, we have to be careful. But in normal situations, one can do it. It's not very difficult. I think I have to end up, right? Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, this one question I didn't understand. How to control sex desire in student life? Okay, this is a totally different topic. So, we'll not deal with it. Thank you. Hari Bhav.
Hare Krishna. So, we'd like to thank His Grace Krishna Kishore Prabhu for wonderfully explaining today's topic by loudly chanting 3 times. Hari Bhav! Hari Bhav! Hari Bhav! So, few announcements. So today prasadam will be served by Giri Govardhan voice devotees. So all the devotees from this voice are requested to stand near the prasadam serving counter by 7:25 p.m. So please take a note of this.